just like to watch that. Isn't that groovy? That is just too much, isn't it? Open the curtain, please. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. We started last week, and I really want to focus on Paul's, what we call his second missionary journey in the book of Acts, but we kind of gave you an introduction to that. This is the map of the Bible lands. Now, if you have a map in the back of your Bible, it will be similar to this. There might be a few differences, which we will mention as we go through it. My wife has been playing a game down at Junior Church. I think she played it, she had it out today, but she was missing some things. I don't know if she reviewed them, or did she play that game with a big board? And it says, are we? Has a question. Did she do that today? Oh, she had that out, and I saw it, and I thought, I want to ask, because we were taking some kids up to the roller skating rink the other day, and the question kids always ask when you get in the car, are we there yet? Are we there yet? By the way, I was thinking of that song that we sang earlier about the missionary song. What was it? The second to last song we sang. What was it? Tender Heart. Take me now, Lord Jesus, take me. We used to listen to those Patch the Pirate. That was my favorite patch. That comes from the Afraidica and the Missions one. I like that song. But that's what we just keep the kids entertained. We sing those songs. But anyways, are we there yet? And I made a statement. I thought, boy, this could be a message. We'll never be there. We're always here. Yeah. Where's that? You know, I got thinking about that after we got home. A lot of people are living to be there, but they're never going to be there. Life is not about the destination. It's about the journey. Huh? Every day. Enjoy. Live for today, not for tomorrow. Tomorrow may never come. Life is not about achievements. It's about helping other people. Nobody are proud of their achievements, the things that they've accomplished. No, we ought to be thankful for the people that we've helped along the way. Only when we see Christ will we understand those that we've helped or be able to thank those that have helped us along the way. Heaven's not a place that we're going. Heaven's a place that we're living in today. Now, we're going to a place that we call heaven, but we're enjoying heaven today. We have a taste of heaven today when you walk with it. What a foretaste of glory divine, the song says. We're created to fellowship with God, and we have sweet fellowship with Him today. But in heaven, we're going to have perfect fellowship with Him. All right, well, we're talking about traveling with the Apostle Paul. And again, I remind you, think of what it was like to travel in Bible times. I love to travel. I like to go places. My wife sometimes will, half jokingly and half telling the truth, say that if it wasn't for her, I'd be gone all the time. That's probably true. I love to travel. I like to go different places, but I would, and as much as I like to camp and travel, I would not like to travel with the Apostle Paul. I would not like enjoy traveling the way that they travel. I like to read things from just a couple of hundred years back, and I guarantee you none of us would survive 2 days if we had to live like they did. I know we watched the silly little House on the Prairie shows and all that. It was absolutely nothing like that. That's the Hollywood version of unrealistic realities. But I do want to mention this, and we're going to zoom in a little bit on the section of the map that we're going to focus on, and then we're going to zoom in a little bit more in a little bit. But I want to mention something. When you notice the place, I think I can point on here, I think. I tried this in rehearsal. My wife tried something, and it worked great. She did it. Who was the one that got wet in junior church? Was that you, Emma? She did that to me, and it worked perfect. She had a bag of water and stuck pencils in it through the water, and she's put 3 pencils in. Not a drop of water came out, and she held it above Emma's head. I think she just put 1 pencil in, and it started dripping water on you. Emma got wet. But it worked in rehearsal. So I say that I think it's worked in rehearsal. I think I can point to these. Notice these things on the map. Oh, I think it shows up. Maybe it doesn't show up. Never mind. It doesn't work here. I'll point this way. Notice these names here, all in capital letters, and they're kind of gray, I think. Is that what color they are on that screen? That's what color they are on my screen. I think they are. Oh, yeah, they are. From the side here, they look green. But over here, they look gray. Those were, I'm just going to, for simplicity, I'm just going to call them regions. We would liken them to the states in our country, but they're really not like the states. I'm clarifying something here you're going to see when you go through the book of Acts, when he mentions places and events. When we travel north, which way is north? That way, to the north. If you were to jump in your car or get out and flap your wings real hard and head north, straight north, what state would you get into next? Wisconsin. Where the cheese heads are, right, Bob? Bob's a native Wisconsin. When you get to Wisconsin, if you're on a road, you're going to see a road sign that says, "Welcome to Wisconsin." When you leave the state of Illinois, we're going to say, "So sorry to see you leave Illinois. Why don't you leave us all your money before you step out of the state?" But there's markers. You go from one state. Traveling from region to region in the Bible was not that way. These regions overlap. Let me just give you a little illustration here. If you look, this is maybe, that's going the wrong way. We'll go this way. This is the region of Syria. See Syria there that it's circled? And then where I'm going to just circle a couple of these. And the region of Galatia. Sometimes the Bible talks about Galatia. In fact, we're going to spend a lot of time in Galatia in the next couple of weeks. We're getting to Galatia tonight, and we're going to spend some time there in the region of Cappadocia. These are kind of, they didn't have exact boundaries. I want you to see in Pamphylia. These are places that are mentioned in the book of Acts and Cilicia. We're going to travel through Cilicia and Syria tonight. And you can be in two or three regions at the same time. You're not leaving one to go to the other. So just so you understand when you read through the Bible that that's kind of the way it works in Phrygia. And we could go around and circle each one of them. And some of them it's hard to go exactly because they went to the coast. But just so you get an idea when we go from one region to another. And then those other names are cities. Now the location of some of these cities is not exactly known today. Some of them they'd have to dig down under present cities to find out exactly where the ancient city was. So some of these places we're not exactly sure where they are. But we left off last week with Paul and Silas starting on the second missionary journey. And I'm going to back up in Acts chapter number 16 is where we're going to look at. Acts 16, 17, and 18 is the second missionary journey. And I'm just going to take some time to go through this. We're not going to get very far tonight, but I want to back up and say a couple of things. What was the city that the missionary journey, Paul's home church, where he left from that home church to go on his first missionary journey? He came back after his missionary journey. Now, we say journey like it's a vacation. I'm talking about being gone for a couple of years and traveling from one place to another. No McDonald's to pull in for a fast food, no Motel 6 with a light on or off. Traveling was so different. I won't even go into that. We can't even imagine what it was like to travel in those days, and most of the time walking on foot with no shoes on. And I know the Sunday school curriculum, the pictures always have, they had sandals on. Most of the time, they didn't have sandals. They just walked barefoot. In fact, that was pretty common just until a couple hundred years ago. Even in our country, some of the settlers and the pioneers in America walked across from the East Coast to the Midwest and all the way to California, or rode in a wagon or whatever. Most of the time, they're barefoot. They were fortunate they got to ride in a wagon. Sometimes that wagon broke down, so they're carrying the wagon, still barefoot a lot of the time. And if you can imagine what it was like to live and travel in those days, and if you read anything about what the reality was of living back then, you'd realize why I say that there ain't a person I've ever met that would live more than 2 days if you lived back then. And myself included, as much as I like to pretend or think that I'm living back then, I know I couldn't do it. What was the name of the town that Paul and Silas are on in now, where their home church is? Antioch, there it is. There's their home church floating in. I've got something here. I'm going to just ask some questions along the way, all right? Oh, too bad. May gets it. No, I'm just kidding. Antioch of Syria is the region. Sometimes it's actually referred to as Antioch Cilicia or Syria. And I want you to see this in Acts chapter number 14 or 15. We're starting in verse number 40. Let's just read the verses, if you will, verse number 40 down through chapter 6 and verse number 5. That's as far as we're going to get tonight. Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren of the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches. And when then came he to Derbe in Lystra. Derbe's where they make the hats, right? You don't get that. You got to be old enough to understand that. And behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus, the son of a certain woman. That's always good to be a son of a certain woman, which was a Jewess and believed, and this his father was a Greek, which was well reported of by the brethren that were in Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him and took and circumcise him because of the Jews which were in those quarters, and they knew all that his father was a Greek. And as they went through the cities and delivered them the decrees to keep that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem, so were the churches established in the faith and increased in number daily. Now we're going to get maybe not even all the way through that this evening, but Paul was left from Antioch. In fact, if you go back to chapter number 15 and verse number 35, I'm going to have to follow my notes in the verses here. I'm going to lose my place here. Paul and Barnabas continued in the Antioch. This is after their first missionary journey. They came back to Antioch, their home church, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others. There are many preachers there, many great men of God. One of the greatest churches you read about in the book of Acts is the First Baptist Church in Antioch. You say, was it called that? No, but that's what it was. And we'll just leave it at that. All right. They, in the next few verses in Antioch, Paul and Barnabas separated and parted company. In verse number 39, we mentioned that last week, and the contention, they couldn't agree on whether they should take John Mark with them. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed to Cyprus. They couldn't, let me just say this, they couldn't manage their anger. By the way, you can't either. The world says we're going to go to anger management classes. And some folks say, well, I just can't get along with that person. We just decide we're not going to talk to each other. We're not going to look at each other. We're just going to manage our anger. No, God says to put your anger off, to put it away, get rid of it. But they decided they didn't want to do that. They're just going to go on. And the contention was so great, they couldn't get along. And some folks will say, well, bless God, they both went two different directions, so God got four missionaries instead of two missionaries. It's not exactly right, but it maybe makes some good preaching if you want to make a certain point. But I want you to see something here in our verses. That Barnabas and Mark, they left from Antioch, and they went to Seleucia, and then they sailed to Cyprus. And if you remember, that was the same route that Barnabas and Saul took on the first missionary journey. And we're just going to leave them there because that's where the Bible leaves them. But there's a couple of things I want to notice about them going to Cyprus and going on this journey. They were no longer, Barnabas and Mark went out. But I want you to note this, they went out on their own. They were no longer under the authority of the Church of Antioch, but they were missionaries. Now, that's going to be important here in a little bit. They did a great job, but not the way God intended missions work to be done. Now, we mention it from time to time. Most folks don't even pay attention enough to know and understand what this means. God's work ought to be done through a local church. That's the way we do things here. There's biblical reasons for that. And I want you to see something here. And I believe with all my heart, now, and I don't want you to take this wrong. Some of you are going to take this and run much farther than what I'm saying. they did a great job. There's no question about it. The Bible doesn't record what happened to them, but Barnabas and Mark, they certainly get right with Paul, and they patch up things eventually. They put off their anger instead of managing their anger. They finally get things right with God. They did a great job, but they didn't do it the way God intended it to be done. They stepped out of the will of God to do the work of God. By the way, I know a lot of folks that do that. They stepped out of the work of the will of God in order to do the work of God. How many of you ever heard the term, and I know this is maybe more for the adults, you ever heard the term a parachurch organization? That's not a bird that you keep in a cage, all right? Not a parrot or parakeet. How many of you have heard that term before, a parachurch organization? There's a lot of parachurch organization. The idea is, or even they call them parachurch because they come alongside. They're not a church, but they come alongside of the church. They're a ministry, but they're not associated with a local church. There's some good ministries that are not associated with a good church, but that's not the way God intended the work of God to be done. Are you with me here? Did I lose you? Barnabas and John Mark were, I believe, a good picture of the first para church. They were not under the authority of a local church. I'm going to show you something here in a minute that'll help you to see this a little bit better. But some people, when I say that, some people assume that I'm against para church organizations. I'm not against them. I've just decided I'm going to follow God's plan all the way and stay under the authority of a local church. And my ministry, my life, is my family is going to revolve around a local church that I'm a part of. Thank God for folks, and some of you may have gotten saved because of the ministry of a parachurch organization. I'm talking about it used to be the old days, the YMCA and the YWCA were parachurch organizations. That was a long time ago when they were gospel preaching ministries. That's how they were started. Or the Church of Christ, or the Campus Crusade ministries, or Youth for Christ. Some of those ministries, or the citywide revival meetings that were popular even amongst a lot of fundamental Baptists years ago. Those are parachurch organizations, and thank God for folks getting saved. But there's something about the next generation. That's not the best way it's to be done. The following generation loses something if we don't follow God's pattern. I don't mean some of you are looking like I've lost you. I want you to see, before we even get to what I'm looking at this evening. I was thinking of this. If I had a nail and wanted to pound it into a piece of wood, the best tool to use would be what? A hammer. Now, I've done this many times. But I don't have a hammer with me, especially when I did electrical work. It was kind of awkward to carry a hammer all the time, but you always had a good pair of Klein electrical pliers. And they work good for a hammer. Not the best thing to use, but it will work. It will get the job done. Maybe you'll bend a couple of nails in the process. It won't work quite as good. And I've even found this out. If you don't have a pair of pliers, you can find an old rock. And you can pound a nail in with a rock. Chances are that's going to work a little bit worse than the pliers, but it'll get the job done. But the best thing to use is a hammer. And that's what I'm getting at here. They were still doing the work of God, but they weren't doing it exactly the way God intended it to be done, the way Barnabas and Saul left on the first missionary journey. Now I want you to see something here. Paul and Silas, notice in verse number 40, that Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. That one verse says a whole lot right there. Paul and Silas, Barnabas and Mark went out. Paul and Silas were sent out by the church. Just like Barnabas and Saul were sent out by the same church in Antioch years before in the first missionary journey. They were recommended by the brethren. That's the church. That's our brothers and sisters in Christ. That's the family of God. That's the local church, the Church of Antioch. They were recommended. They were sent by that church unto the grace of God. The grace of God is something that I need every day, and I found the best place. There's a song that one of the workers in RU sang. I think Brother Chad sang it a couple of times, but it kind of goes high out of my range, and the low part's all right, but the high part's kind of... But that doesn't work too good. This must be the place of God's grace. Talking about the local church and the importance of a local church is the place of God's grace. They were sent out unto the grace of God, doing the work of God. And I just learned a long time ago that what I need more than anything else in my life is the grace of God. And I want to make sure I'm right in my church so I can have the grace of God. Well, let's go to the travels that the Apostle Paul and Silas went on in verse number 41. And it says, and he went through Syria and Cilicia. Do you see Syria and Cilicia on the map? Now, wait a minute. It looks like on the map, that's why I pointed this out, they're all capital letters. Those are regions. They're in opposite directions. What, do they have a split personality or what? How do they go to both those places? Remember, those places overlap. They didn't have direct boundaries. So when they started out, they started in Syria. They were still in Syria. And for a while, they were in Syria and Cilicia at the same time. And they were traveling to the north from Antioch. As they went in that direction, it says, and then they went over to Cilicia. And again, we see the cities there, and chances are the route that they took went along the coast. So I kind of drew the lines where I would assume that I've never been there. I'm not sure what the best route is. But that's the way I would assume that the routes would have taken them. The Bible simply says that they went throughout Syria and Cilicia in those regions. No doubt there were small villages, small towns along the way. And by the way, Barnabas and Saul went that same direction on their first missionary journey. There were probably folks that they led to the Lord along the way, maybe churches that they started along the way. And it says in verse number 41 that they were confirming the churches. They were confirming the churches. Notice again, their ministry was centered on local churches. The word confirming means they were supporting, strengthening, encouraging local churches. If you could picture it this way, I know the terminology is different and the setting was completely different, just like traveling was completely different in those days. It would be like in our day where we have an evangelist comes in and preaches a special meeting that we're going to call a revival meeting. They were going to the churches. Maybe they were going to one church and they're going to teach on how to have a happy marriage. And they're going to have a preaching time on marriage. Maybe another church they're going to preach on how to be a better soul winner. Maybe they had a subject, or maybe they just had some things that they saw that church needed. They were confirming, exhorting, encouraging the churches, but everything in their ministry was centered around the churches. Now, we see in verse number 6, in chapter 16, now that's where we're starting, actually. We're just getting started now. Then came he to Derbe, because he needed a new hat, right? Do you know what a Derbe hat is? How many kids know what a Derbe hat is? Okay, some of you do. We'll leave that there. That's the name of a town. They came to Derbe, and if you follow the map up to Derbe, there's Derbe. Let me tell you a little bit about the city of Derbe. They were going through. They went, and by the way, they had already passed through Tarsus. Remember what Tarsus was? Paul's hometown. That's little Paul. We remembered him when he was throwing rocks through the neighbor's windows. Oh, we know him. And now he's a preacher. And can you imagine what he was? And he's telling his family, his friends that he grew up with, how he'd been saved. And I can just use your imagination there to figure out what was going on as he went through his hometown. But now he comes to the big city of Derbe. And Derbe was a rather large city for the day, for the region. It's a city that we don't know. The best I can find, nobody knows exactly where the location of the city would have been when Paul traveled there. There are some modern cities or villages in the area. But it would be, I call it a big city in the sense that I sometimes tell people, they ask where I'm from, I say Amboy. And they say, what's that by? Nothing. I say, the big city by us is where we got to go to a Walmart. We're going to find our first traffic light. What's that big city? Dixon. Dixon would be like Derby. It wasn't big. It was big for the areas around them, but it really wasn't much of a city. Barnabas and Paul were there early in their first missionary journey. In fact, they were there licking their wounds. We'll get to that in a little bit. They were kind of headed the other direction. They came from the north when they came to Derby, and that was their turning around point where they went back north and circled around to come home on their missionary journey. I'll mention that in a little bit, where they came from when they went to Derby. But it was the hometown of somebody named Gaius. In Acts 20, in verse number 4, he's somebody who later accompanied the Apostle Paul, a missionary co-worker named Gaius. There's not much said about him, but good things are, whenever he's spoken of, good things are said about him. He's a faithful servant. That was his hometown, that was his claim to fame. He's from the city of Derbe. And after they left Derbe, they went to Lystra. And again, the distance between the cities in question, because we don't know where either one of them exactly were when the Apostle Paul was alive. Some have guessed that they're as much as 20 miles away. Some have guessed they're much less than 20 miles away. And some maps, if you have a map in the back of your Bible, they might put them in a little bit different location than where they are in this particular map. But again, it would be, I'm picturing it, it's about the distance from Dixon to Amboy. So he went to of course, going a different direction. But if you can picture in your mind, Dixon, and especially when I started reading about the city of Lystra, the reputation that Lystra had, it began to remind me something of Amboy. It had a reputation for being a rough community. I mean, there's some ruffians there. There's some heavy drinkers there. Huh? Now, I know that's our hometown. You know, we're supposed to, everything's rosy, squeaky clean here. But in reality, Amboy has got a reputation, and it's not a real good reputation. And that's somewhat the way Lystra was. Now, let me just tell you about Barnabas and Saul's earlier visit to the city of Lystra. And then we're going to get to the main message tonight. All right? They came to this city coming from Antioch. They came down to Lystra from the other direction in their first missionary journey. And if you remember, I kind of touched on this last time, and I'm just going to give you a quick review just to let you know what kind of people lived in there. They came to the city, and a crippled man was healed in Acts chapter number 14. And when the people that were worshiped their pagan gods, when they saw Barnabas and Saul healed this crippled man, they began to gather the crowds together and they brought animals in to do sacrifice. They realized Barnabas and Saul, or Barnabas, his name had already changed to Paul, Barnabas and Paul were gods. And they were going to offer sacrifices to these gods that they renamed Jupiter and Mercurius. After their God, they said, they've come in the flesh and we're here to worship them. And Paul and Barnabas begged them, no, don't worship. And they could hardly stop them from worshiping them. And then the people began to listen to them preach the gospel. But then some Jews from Antioch heard that they had gone down there. The Jews were upset at them for preaching about Jesus and preaching the gospel. And they came down to that city. And they literally drug Barnabas and Saul outside the city limits of Lystra. And when they got outside the city limits, they saw Paul, and the pagans that were getting saved saw Paul as the chief spokesman, because he was the one that did the talking when the man got healed. And they wanted to call, they called him Mercurius because he was the chief spokesman. And they worshiped him, and the Jews that were envious of what was going on were really angry at Paul more than they were Barnabas, because he was a spokesman for the two. And they took him, drug him outside the city in a mob, and began to pick up rocks and began to hurl them at Paul. And they literally stoned the Apostle Paul to death in Lystra. And now he's coming back to that same town. I don't know about you, but I don't know if I'd have enough grace to do that. If I came back, I think I'd be riding a tank. Huh? I'd level that place. We'll take care of them. But he went back there again. And by the way, after they stoned him, the disciples that were saved and those that had just gotten saved and those that were traveling with Barnabas and Saul had gathered around him for a prayer meeting. And they began to pray. They're having a funeral service is what they were doing. Then the Apostle Paul started moving. Look, it's always a nightmare when I was a kid at a funeral. He's moving. And sure enough, he would move. He got up, dusted himself off, and start preaching again. Can you imagine what was going on? Later on, Paul accounts this and says that he knows somebody who went to the third heaven. He went to heaven and he came back. And God said, other than Jesus, he was allowed to do that. One of the few people that was allowed to do that. And he said, I can't tell you what I saw up there. Boy, today, too bad he didn't live today. He could have made $1 million writing a book about it, huh? He said, no, God won't tell me. Let me tell you what I saw up there. He was raised from the dead. But now, maybe the most important thing in Lystra was not that Paul was stoned there and raised from the dead, but I want you to notice in Lystra, in verse number 1, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus. Now, I want to just take a little bit of time tonight. I'm going to crumple up the map, get rid of that, and look at Timotheus, or Timothy. It says that he was a son of a certain woman, which was a Jewess, which believed the Father. Now, let me tell you something about Timothy. He was probably at this time a teenager. And as you can imagine, he would have been impressed by the Apostle Paul. Here's this preacher coming in, stirring up all this trouble. And I see the religious leaders drag him out of the city and stone him to death. And now he's raised from the dead. I tell you what, that'd get the average teenager's attention, wouldn't it? I mean, more than a video game. That would get their attention. And all of a sudden he was idolized, the Apostle Paul. He was impressed by Paul. In fact, later on, Paul writes to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter number 1, calls him Timothy, my own son in the faith. He saw Timothy as his son. And Timothy, I believe, saw the Apostle Paul as his father. He was a father figure to him. And it says that Timothy's mother was a certain woman who was a Jewish and believed, and his father was a Greek. Now, I'm going to pick that verse apart and tell you something about Timothy and his dad. His father was a Greek, which means he was an uncircumcised Gentile. He was not a Jewish convert. He was not a Jewish proselyte. He was recognized by the Jews as a dirty dog, an unclean person. Most likely, by the time Timothy was a teenager, he was already deceased. When we're talking about him, we're really talking about him in past tense. He was a Greek. He's no longer with us, probably died before he was ever saved. Probably in hell right now. Evidently, Timothy didn't grow up in a religious home. Well, it's mentioned his mother, who is a Jewess. Now, obviously, she was not a practicing Jew. Otherwise, she would have not married a Gentile, right? She was not even a faithful Jew. She was Jewish by blood, but not by faith. She wasn't saved. She wasn't concerned about her salvation. But maybe it was the first trip that the Apostle Paul made to the city of Lystra that Timothy's mother and grandmother both got saved, probably because of the preaching of the Apostle Paul. Timothy's mother and grandmother became a great influence in his life, so much that Paul says to Timothy in writing in 2 Timothy chapter number 1, when I call to remembrance, when I remember the unfeigned faith, the sincere, the genuine. I mean, when your mama got saved, she really got it. I mean, she was a different person when she got up off her knees and called upon the Lord Jesus Christ as her Savior. He says that faith first dwelt in thy grandmother, Lois. Grandma Lois was a godly lady. And I have no doubt that Lois and his mother, Eunice or Eunice, I've heard it pronounced a dozen different ways. I just say Eunice. That's the way I'm used to saying that name. His mother and his grandmother were very influential in his faith, in his upbringing. We're talking about Timothy here. And then Paul says, oh, you know what? I've got this verse up here and I didn't even put it up there for you. So you can read along. When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith, the unwavering, the real, the sincere, the genuine faith that was first in thy grandmother Lois and then in thy mother Eunice, but it didn't stop there. And by the way, your grandma's faith can't get you to heaven, kids. Your mama's faith can't get you to heaven. And Paul says this to Timothy, I'm persuaded that it's in thee also. I don't know if Paul was there at the exact moment when Timothy got saved. I have a feeling that it kind of worked this way, that grandma and mom got saved under Paul's preaching. After Paul left, Timothy was impressed with the ministry of Paul, and maybe through the influence of his mom and grandmother and their witness to him, he eventually got saved as a young person. What I want you to see about the Apostle Paul, or about Timothy, first of all, we're looking at Timothy. Number one, he had a godly testimony. And verse number two, speaking still of Timothy, it says, which was well reported of the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Now, on our map, I don't have the map up there anymore. I could go back. Actually, I think on the map that I have here, I don't believe the city of Iconium is even... Oh, yeah, it is on there. I'll show it to you real quick. Iconium is on that map. They were probably twin cities. There looks like there's a little space on this map of those two cities. But in that region of Lystra and Iconium, Timothy had that testimony of being not only saved, but a godly young man. A young man that knew what it was to pray. A young man that loved the Bible. A young man that told others about Jesus Christ. A young man that knew how to control his appetites and his anger and his spirit, his attitude. And he walked with God. And everybody around him knew that he had that godly testimony. In verse number 2. And then in verse number 3. I want you to see this. Whom would Paul have to go forth with him? Paul said, man, he'd be a good man to take along with us on this journey. He'd be a good one to bring with me as we travel, telling folks about Jesus. He took him and circumcised him because of the Jews. You remember, Timothy was not raised in a Jewish family, so he was not circumcised when he was a child. Have mom and dad explain to you what that is later, all right? Which were in those quarters, and they all knew that his father was a Greek. Paul said, if you're going to work with me, you're going to have to take care of something. And Timothy, another thing I see about Timothy, he was willing to do anything. Think about that for a little bit, huh? It's okay to snicker a little bit if you want to. I mean, he would pay any price to be a servant to the Apostle Paul. I remember when our two boys were born in Missouri, and we had a Dr. Thomas Hare was his name. And I had to ask my wife, how did they spell his name, like hair on your head or hair like the bunny? It was hair like a bunny is how he spelled his name. But his name was Thomas. And when Nathan was born, Nathan's middle name is Thomas. And Dr. Hare thought that we named him after him. We did like the doctor. He was a good man. He wasn't saved. We witnessed to him a number of times, but he just had a couple of quirks about him. One was he wasn't saved, but another one, he was a health food nut, but he smoked. He was a chain smoker, but he was a health food nut. I thought that was a little bit odd, but anyway, he thought that we named Nathan Thomas after Thomas Hare. And he was so happy. I mean, he was in tears when we told him what Nathan's, and we didn't have the heart to tell him any different. So he still to this day thinks that Nathan's named after him, but he really wasn't. But I remember Dr. Hare saying, and both our boys, he said, well, you come back in 8 days, and we'll circumcise. And I know now they do it the very day that they're born. And he said, we're going to do it 8 days. But first of all, because that's what the Bible says. Now, this is an unbeliever that said that. And second, as far as medical reasons, your blood doesn't start to coagulate and clot until after 7 or 8 days. And that's why God said that to begin with. But he would joke about this. I remember when Aaron went in the next week, you know, I won't go into more details on that. All right, some of you wondering, how far are you going to go with this? And the doctor just said, you know, I had this recurring nightmare. And Aaron came out screaming, you know, like a little kid did. Wood, after going through the procedure, he said, I had this recurring nightmare that all these little boys that were little, they're going to remember me when they're men. And they're going to come back for me. And I'm hiding under the bed, hiding under the couch. I'm scared for my life. But Timothy, as a young man, as a young adult, as a teenager, we would call it today, said, I will gladly do that. Not a comfortable thing, I can guarantee you. But he was willing to do whatever it took to join with the Apostle Paul. And as they went through, in verse number 4, the cities, they delivered them the decrees to keep those words. They joined the Apostle Paul and continued on in their journey. I want you to see something else in Timothy's life that I see it all through his life. And we read much about Timothy later, and much of the Apostle Paul. You see Timothy right there by his side, serving him. And I want you to understand this. Timothy loved his preacher. He was a great source of encouragement to his preacher. He was faithful and loyal to his preacher. I tell people all the time, and I've said this since shortly after I got saved, when God got my heart right with my relationship to Dad, it took me a while to patch up the foolish things that I did as a new Christian, thinking I was doing the right thing but making things worse. The two most influential people in my life are my dad and my pastor. My dad's in heaven now. I'm glad I could tell that to him before he went to heaven. I'm glad he got saved before he went to heaven. I've told my pastor that. I'm going to try to see him in a couple of weeks. He's in a nursing home now. I still think of him as my pastor. Last I talked to him, his mind is still pretty sharp. His sight is about gone completely. But the two most influential people, I was asked, as interviewed by somebody the other day, who are the most influential people in your life? I had no question about it. Now, there's a lot of other folks, but those two, no question about it. I remember when I was a kid, I thought my dad was Superman. I thought for sure if he ever took his shirt off, there would be a big S on his chest. I just thought, and I'm grateful I grew up in a generation that used to think that way about their dads. I thought he was perfect when I was a child. There was never a bigger, a stronger man. Now, as I grew up, I ended up being a couple inches taller than my dad. Not as big around, but at least taller than my dad. I learned as a teenager that my dad, as he used to say, put his pants on one leg at a time. He was human, just like everybody else. And when I first learned that, I became very self-righteous, very bitter. And it's only because of the grace of God that God even allowed me to live. But I learned to bless and honor and obey my dad later in life. I was greatly influenced by my dad, and I'm thankful for that. There's other people that have been a great influence. I was thinking of this. I don't know why. I've shared part of this with you before. My oldest brother is going to, in a little less than a month, he's going to be 71 years old. And he told me something that transformed. Actually, two things that transformed. I shared one of them with you. When I was a teenager, I was like the average teenager. I didn't really have a lot of cares or concerns about anything in life. And I'd just gotten saved. God began to work in my heart. And I remember, the story was I rode my bicycle to work, which is about a 7 or 8 mile ride, which no big deal, and work 8 hours and ride back home. And my brother was talking to somebody and said, "Whose bike is that?" And so, "Oh, that's Rocky's bike." And I said, "What's that? He rode it from home?" "Well, I'm surprised. He's so lazy." He didn't know I was there. He didn't know I heard him call me lazy. But as soon as he said that, I said, "He's exactly right. I am lazy." And I determined right there, nobody's ever going to call me lazy again, unless they're lying. I ain't going to be that way anymore. And I'm great. I told him just a few years ago, and of course he didn't remember even saying that. I said, "Thank you for doing that. Even though you didn't know what you were doing, you didn't know what I heard, but that transformed my life. I was a young Christian, wanted to be a witness to my family, and realized I couldn't be a witness to my family if I had a bad spirit and I had a lazy attitude. And God had to get rid of that for me." And then my dad passed away a few years ago, and I've told you how I shared the gospel with him one last time, and he said that he knows he's saved, he's okay, he's ready to go to heaven if this is the time. And then his pastor came in and gave him exactly the opposite message that I had, and I'm sitting there going like this. And when the pastor left, I said, "Dad, you know baptism doesn't get you to heaven." He said, "Yeah, I know that. That's just what he says." But and then I didn't know this after I left. I didn't know it till after the funeral. And I said some things. I shared that story at the funeral of my father. And my oldest brother came to me. I didn't know that he was the next visitor my dad had that day, right after I left. And he said that he went in there and tried to talk to Dad, and he was just silent. He was just quiet. And my brother found out later that I was just in there. Mom was went out to lunch with another one of my brothers, and he came in, and he said, "Dad just said, he's just something, isn't he?" And my brother Rod says, "Who are you talking about? Who's something?" "Is that Rocky? He's just something." And praise God, it had nothing to do with me. He just saw something in me that is all the grace of God. And I loved him. And thank God that I was able to share the gospel with him a number of times. And many times he threatened to do all kinds of things when I shared the gospel. If I said another word, it might be the last word I say and things like that. But thank God that he eventually got saved. And I'm thankful for the influence he was in my life. I'm thankful for the influence that my pastor was in my life. I'm going to say this. Timothy knew Paul on a human level probably better than anybody else. He probably spent more time with you. If you follow him, Timothy's there most of the ministry. There's a few times that Paul left him in a city to pastor a church or to choose pastors for regional churches. But most of that, he knew Paul better than anybody else. And the Apostle Paul was not a perfect man. He was not a perfect preacher. I can show you, and we maybe will show you some things. And boy, he would have been a whole lot better off if he would have done this. And we can second guess. We can look back at things. And some folks would be critical about some things he did. But he made a life-changing decision as a young man that he's my pastor and I'm going to follow him. I'm going to listen to him. He's going to be my hero. I know that I've told you, it's been a long time since I told you. I know it happened not too long before we came here. How many remember the 84 Bears? Huh? Walter Payton and Defuigueta. I'm talking like my boys used to talk. And I remember we were at the mall, and of course my wife was going into a store where, you know, guys don't want to go in there. And the boys and I were out wandering around, and we said, let's go, guys, let's go see if we can find something else to look at. Let's go see if we can find a sporting goods store or something that we can look at. And we walked out, and we walked by the store, and of course, there's, I don't know, some sports store. And look, there's a refrigerator. Look, there's Walter Payton. Look, there's Jim I mean, they're going through all the football players and everything, and yeah, whoa, that's cool. And then sitting on the bench in that mall, the mall doesn't even exist anymore, was Pastor Swanson. See, his wife had gone in that store too, and he was out sitting on the bench because he didn't want to go in there. And the kid and my boys were like, whoa, bigger than all these bigger than life people is Pastor Swanson. There he is, in the flesh. They ran up and gave him a big hug and shook his hand and were glad to see their preacher. And I thought, oh my, I'm so glad that my pastor is my hero in my life. And I'm so glad that God showed me the importance of not only making him my hero, but training my children to love their pastor and to honor their father. The things that happened, the bad things, so to speak, with my dad, my kids never knew that growing up. I never shared that with them. I wanted them to love and respect their grandfather, and thank the Lord that later on when they got to know him, things were different after he trusted Christ as his Savior. But the life-changing decision that Paul made in his, or Timothy made in his life, that I'm going to be faithful and loyal and be an encouragement to my pastor. I'm praying. I'm always praying for some Timothys that will jump in and follow. And then one other thing about Timothy, and we'll be done. He became a great man of God. He became a great man of God. He became, I believe, the greatest example of what a pastor ought to be. Paul wrote two letters to Timothy, 1st and 2nd Timothy. They're part of what we call the pastoral epistles, instructing Timothy how to not only be a pastor, but how to instruct other pastors to be faithful, loyal pastors. And Timothy became one of the great men of God in the Bible. And we don't read about his exploits like we do the Apostle Paul, but he was right there with him. He was a great example. In fact, I just enjoyed last week spending reading through the books of 1 and 2 Timothy a number of times in my own personal devotions. And I remember back when God first called me to preach, my pastor said, you ought to become familiar with the books of 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus, the pastoral epistles, and commit them to memory, commit them to your heart, and focus on them. And I can't help but to think of this great young man, Timothy, that had a godly testimony. Let no man despise thy youth. You're a young man, but stand for truth. He was willing to do anything for the cause of Christ. I've got to be, what? Oh yeah, I'll do that. No big deal. And he was an encouragement to his pastor. He loved and faithful and loyal to his pastor. His pastor was like a father to him. His father was already gone by the time he got saved. But he chose to follow his preacher like he was his own father. And he became a great man of God. What a great man Timothy is. What an example he leaves for us today. And I encourage you young men, God help me to be like a Timothy. And when God called me to preach, I'd always refer to myself, I'm one of my pastor's Timothys. And he's my apostle. I've called him sometimes my apostle Paul, like I call Jacob Goliath. Huh? What did I call you tonight when I saw you? There's Goliath right there. I saw my pastor. I say, hey, pastor, you're my Paul, and I want to be your Timothy. I want to be faithful. I want to be loyal. I want to love you, and I'm grateful for you and how God has used you in my. And by the way, my pastor's not perfect. But I still love him, and I still honor him and respect him, and think he's one of the greatest men that I've ever met. There are some things, if I was getting nitpicky, and there were times that I did get bitter and self-righteous and thought, well, pastor doesn't believe this, but hey, it doesn't matter. He's my pastor. Huh? My dad's a man. I'm supposed to honor him. I'm supposed to respect him. I want to be a faithful Timothy, and I want to be used of God. And if you want to be used of God, I encourage you to be like Timothy, to have a godly testimony. That's where it starts. Oh, yeah, he got saved, but everybody in town is talking about what a good testimony, what a good example he is of Christianity. That's the way a Christian, that's the way a young person ought to live. Wouldn't it be great if we had more young people like that? And everybody in town was talking about Timothy's testimony, saved and lost people. And he was willing to do anything for Christ. He loved his preacher, and he became a great man of God. I'm going to ask you to...